In the name of God, the Creator, Liberator, and Sustainer of the universe. Amen. We are created, we believe, in the image and likeness of a God who is a relational God, which means that we are relational beings. Isolation can become for us a form of punishment. One of the worst forms of punishment in a prison is solitary confinement, cut off relationships. Isolation can lead to desolation, feelings of abandonment, feelings that we are in this just by ourselves and there is very little hope. I remember some years ago going to visit a woman whose name was Martha. Her husband of 50 years, Jim, had recently died. On this day when I went to see her, she was extremely agitated. And she was no longer speaking as if Jim had died. She was absolutely furious, talking to herself, saying that Jim had abandoned her and that Jim had absolutely no right to do that to her, that he had left her alone and left her without a future. In spite of our best efforts, our attempts to intervene in Martha's life, this woman who was relatively healthy was dead in 6 months. She had, in a very real sense, decided to excommunicate herself from the human community. Abandonment, feelings of abandonment, can lead to death. As relational beings, we need other beings. I was a university chaplain for many years. And every year, about this same time, graduation time, there were a number of things that almost always happened. But this always happened. The scene is graduation day. Students have their caps and gowns on. They're marching over to receive their diplomas. And they all said the same thing to their closest friends. We will always be in contact. I know that as soon as I get my apartment in Atlanta, Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, that you will come and visit. Nothing will change. But it does. Joy is a very fleeting emotion. Even the deepest forms of joy often cannot endure the desolation of distance, the ravages of time. time is a destroyer of relationships. Separation does not normally make the heart grow fonder. We say we will never forget. I will never forget you. I will never forget our special relationships. And yet we as human beings are pitiful in our ability to remember. Today is Mother's Day, and I was thinking about my own mother during this past week. And I was thinking a lot about her death. She died 15 years ago, a little over 15 years ago now. And the last year and a half of her life, she lived with us as she was dying with pancreatic cancer. And I had the great privilege of being with her at the moment of death. I had just administered the last rites to her, and she died. I never had that happen before, which meant I could say those prayers that are in the prayer book for those who have just died. And I've never had that opportunity before, just right then to do it. And I sort of figured she wanted to offer me the chance to do this liturgical act, which I had never done before. It's her sort of final gift to me. But I remember thinking that I would never forget her. Particularly, I thought I would never forget what she looked like. Smile on her face. As I looked at her in that moment, I'll never forget what she looked like, I thought to myself. Also felt a sort of sense of loss that there would never be probably anyone else in the whole world that thought I was absolutely perfect. And I wasn't sure how I was going to deal with that. But anyway, I said I will never forget. I often find myself now, and I did this last week, I picked up this photo of her and just looked at it, trying to recall what she really looked like, because I had sort of forgotten what she looked like. Had a sort of vague memory, but in terms of detail, I had to look at this picture. Is this what she looked like? We say we won't forget, but we do forget. We say we will maintain relationships, but we don't. Relationships change. After the resurrection, and after the disciples had worked through their fear, there was, for a brief moment, a period of great joy in this community. And then they began to reflect on their new reality. And one of the things that became clear to them was that the resurrected Christ was not present to them the way Jesus of Nazareth had been present to them. He was not there every day, walking with them, teaching them, etc. They began to miss that presence. And then they began to recall that Jesus had told them on more than one occasion that he would leave, that he would not be present with them the way he had been before. And this community became distraught. They became distraught. They began to act as if Jesus was going to abandon them, leave them alone. And they really weren't sure how they would go on, if they could go on. What would happen to this movement? What would happen to their own faith? John's gospel is the gospel that is more concerned than any other gospel about this issue, about Jesus leaving the disciples and what happens. In the 14th chapter of John's gospel, and our gospel reading today is this reading, beginning with the 23rd verse, there's a question that's asked in the 22nd verse, just before our gospel reading begins, by a disciple whose name is Judas, not Judas Iscariot, but another disciple named Judas, who asked Jesus, "How are you going to be present with us? How are you going to be present with us if you leave?" And what we have in our gospel reading today is Jesus' response to this question. It is Jesus' farewell address in John's gospel. And Jesus says to this group of disciples, "I will give you my peace. If you are my follower, you will know God's shalom." God's shalom. Now, God's shalom does not mean that everything is going to be okay all the time. It doesn't mean you're going to have a nice day every day. It doesn't even mean that if you just think positively, only good things will happen. It doesn't mean that. It means that God will be present to you in such a way that you will learn to rely on God's presence and know that you and God and the community can live through any reality. "I will give you that," he said. "And I will do it primarily by sending my Spirit to you." Spirit of Jesus is going to come to you, and the Spirit is going to continue to guide you, to teach you, to support and sustain you. And this Spirit will remind you of what I taught you, and it will remind you of our life together. And empowered by the Spirit, you will be able to become my liberating, loving community here and now. You know, Christianity is not primarily a set of rules. Christianity is not primarily a moral code. Christianity is not primarily a set of noble ideas or even teachings. Primarily, Christianity is that community which believes that the risen Christ is present. It is that community that believes that the risen Christ is present to us right now. It is that community that believes that Christ is present to us and leading us, guiding us, sustaining us. It is that community that believes that Jesus has made his home with us. Jesus says to the disciple in John's gospel, "I will come to you and I will make my home with you." We believe that even when two or three are gathered together in his name, he is present. We believe that we have not been left alone. We have not been abandoned, but that we are living. We are living in the presence of the risen Christ. And that that presence is with us daily. That presence, we do not believe, is something we create or even demand. We believe that presence is a real gift to us. A real gift that sustains us on a daily basis. I remember as a young boy, 10 to 12 years old, at times listening to my grandfather, who was a lay preacher in the mountains of North Carolina, listening to him pray with people in the Appalachian Mountains. And he prayed for many things. He might pray for a good harvest, might pray that the crops didn't fail, might pray for healing, might pray that people would find work. He might pray that people would be relieved from their anguish. But what impressed me the most as a young boy was not the content of his prayers, but that whenever he prayed, he seemed to know the one he was speaking to. When he said the word Jesus, you knew that he was not speaking to a stranger. It was somebody he knew. He was speaking to the risen Christ. And that relationship was so real that there was very little room to doubt it. I remember more than once in the civil rights movement standing on some bridge that Dr. King said we were going to march over in just a little bit. And what was on the other side of that bridge was not so inviting. With state troopers, Sheriff Pritchard, people with clubs, dogs. Dr. King always said pretty much the same thing. He said, now we're going to walk across this bridge because Jesus is leading the way. And we're going to follow him right across this bridge. And we're going to meet him on the other side. Now he said, you know, when you follow Jesus, you sometimes get a few nails in your hands, maybe a spear in your side, something like that. But you know you're going to make it over to the other side. And we believed him. And we marched across that bridge. And Jesus met us on the other side. You know, Joshua in Jericho marched around the walls and they came falling down. Well, we marched across these bridges, whether that was in Selma or Albany, Georgia, or Cicero, Illinois, and these walls of hatred, of racism, segregation began to fall down. They didn't begin to fall down because of our great insight or our great moral courage. They began to fall down because the resurrected Christ was present to us, just marching with us across that bridge, wanting those walls to come tumbling down. I remember being at this conference in Connecticut. We're getting ready to go out to serve as a missionary. This group of us serve as missionaries in various parts of the world. Remember this old Liberian bishop saying, "This is the most important thing you have to remember if you're going to be a missionary in another culture." He says, "You don't go to that culture carrying Christ on your back." He said, "Christ is already there. Christ is already there in Central America. Christ is already there in the Caribbean. Christ is already there in Africa. Christ is already there in Asia. And your job is to figure out what the risen Christ is doing there and get with that action." And we believed that old bishop. And we went, and we found that the risen Christ was present among sugarcane cutters in Haiti. We found that the resurrected Christ was present among political prisoners in Nicaragua. We found that the resurrected Christ was present among campesinos in El Salvador. We found the resurrected Christ was present among the poor and the oppressed, tearing down walls that we did not believe could ever come down. And most of us felt that we were converted in a new way by what Christ was doing there. Joy is a very fleeting emotion. Relationships change. We make promises never to forget, and we forget. We say, "You can count on me to stay in touch," and we don't. But we know that in our journey to the New Jerusalem, in spite of our own behavior, the resurrected Christ is present to us and calling us on, always saying to us, "Don't be afraid to cross that next bridge. Don't be afraid, because I've already gone over it, and I'll meet you on the other side. I'll meet you on the other side, and we will celebrate those walls of injustice falling down." The early Christian community did not become a community of desolation. The early Christian community was aware that Christ was present to them in a new way, and they became a faith, hope-filled, loving community. Today we are called to remember that we are who we are because Christ is present to us, and we are called to live daily in that awareness. Let there be peace among us, and let us not be instruments of our own or anyone else's oppression. Amen.